Sober on Purpose is the podcast that takes you beyond clean to fulfilling your dreams. Other programs get you sober. We ask, what's next? Come thrive with us.
Hello, Sober on Purpose family. I am Tanya Joya, and I'm bringing you another exciting guest. We are delving even more so into the body health sphere as we learn more about that. I have Beth Sandlin, who is an NCPT, and she's been teaching Pilates since 2004, which means she lived through the pandemic. So guess what? All of her stuff is online too. And we'll talk to you about that at the end. And of course, put that in the show notes. But one of the things that we've been talking about is Pilates came about because Joseph Pilates was not a very well young man. So Beth, can you tell us a little bit more about you, your approach, and how you found Joseph Pilates really the place for you to hang your hat?
Thanks so much for that. I really go into the mindset of when we're working out, it's not just for a good workout. It's because it supports us in a different way. And if we don't feel good, if we don't have energy throughout the day, then we're not going to be living our best life. And I came across this understanding very young at the age of 20 when I was diagnosed with cancer. During that time, I definitely wasn't feeling good, but it connected me at a very, very young age to the importance of how we physically feel impacts our happiness, our joy, how we can connect with others. And it was so impactful that it changed my life's path to health education and eventually Pilates. Because I have to tell you, it was very humbling when I tried to hold my nephew and I couldn't even hold him. I was in such a deconditioned state. I had to give him back to my sister less than a minute later because I was sweating and shaking. And I knew I didn't want that to be my life's experience. So that's why I've dedicated my life's practice and also make sure I have a workout routine that's really consistent, which isn't the same thing as constant. We can definitely get to that later if you want. I came to Pilates about a year and a half after my diagnosis with cancer, and it was interesting in the fact that it felt kind of similar to what I was doing for my gym workouts. There was something a little bit more intriguing and unique about it. My teacher was really great at explaining different options to me so that I was working more optimally in my body. And it made me inspired to become a Pilates teacher, which now I've been teaching for over 20 years. And one of the elements of Pilates is there's a deeper understanding of mind-body connection and being mindful with how we move. As you mentioned, Joseph Pilates was not a well child. His father was more of an athlete. His mother was a naturopath. And he really combined these to create the Pilates method that we know today of how we can work more optimally with our body, which is why a lot of the exercises have a linked breathing pattern. It's similar to yoga in that sense, but much different that there's no spiritual component with Pilates. It's more of an exercise routine. Now we can definitely turn up that dial of intensity, but we can also turn it down. Maybe when we're getting back into working out, when we're recovering from something, if our nervous system is impacted in any way from stress, trauma, or just the constant busyness of life, that we may need to make adjustments to our workouts.
So what I have really loved about it is one, there being a Christian, there's none of that. Do I have to worry about, am I praying to the wrong God? Am I doing these wrong poses? Anything like that? This was specifically designed, as you said, Joseph Pilates was a sick kiddo and he couldn't do the things that other kiddos could do. Talk through the breathe. Most of us don't breathe well, if I understand correctly. Can you talk us through how that breathing changes our body, our mind, and does a lot of healing for us as we go through the Pilates exercises?
Oh, I'd love to, because there are both physical benefits of deep breathing and also we know mental health benefits of deep breathing. And it's as simple as, can we take a deep breath? And even though it seems so simple for a lot of people, the moment they try to take a deep breath, it's like, wait, I can't. It feels constricted. And it's simply because we've been maybe holding tension or focusing on more shallow breath, which most of us do shallow breath throughout the day. There's nothing wrong with that. It supports our life. Yet there's also a time in practice when we want to focus on deep breathing. In fact, I can't tell you how many people I know who they end up going to the physical therapist for back pain or something else. And then I talk to them about how's it going. And I said, Beth, why are they teaching me breathing exercises? It's because it's valuable to release tension, to help with back pain. It helps with incontinence, pelvic floor dysfunction. It can help and foster deep core engagement. And beyond the physical benefits of deep breathing, we also know that focusing on deep conscious breathing can help strengthen our prefrontal cortex, which is a protective mechanism against stress. It's a way that we can be more resilient. And the number one thing that I encourage people to do is focus it on breathing when you don't have to. So if you've ever maybe been like going and going and someone's like, can't you just take a deep breath? Well, you may not feel that's the best time because you are in that hustle mode. So focus and practice on that deep breathing with Pilates exercises or just as a standalone practice when it makes sense. And in that way, when we're practicing, when maybe we're in a more regulated state during those times of high stress, it's easier to tap back into, oh, you know, I have a skill of taking a deep breath to calm the body, to reset.
Absolutely. You're making me sit here and I'm like, okay, I need to sit up straighter. I need to breathe better. Cause I know there are times where I've totally collapsed, you know, in front of the computer. I'm going to say this, I'm boobs to tummy because I've fallen over so much. And it's that whole opening up. There's another side to it. We were talking before we started recording about your cancer and looking back and looking at the trauma piece. How did you begin to recognize that and that Pilates was something that could help with that?
It wasn't until many years after I had cancer that I recognized the importance of understanding what we have experienced and maybe identifying with it in a slightly different way. Because when I was going through cancer over 20 years ago, we just didn't speak about trauma as prevalently as we are today. And it was, I'm a cancer survivor. You're doing so great, Beth. And yet I actually had some negative impacts from cancer that I didn't know was like a sign of post-traumatic stress disorder. I didn't recognize that until I started learning more about trauma. And I really learned more about that starting around 2012 when I was working in a university environment. Was having much different conversations with people and colleagues compared to working exclusively in a Pilates studio. And in particular, the collaborations and conversations I was having with the interpersonal violence office were very profound because I started recognizing the prevalence of interpersonal violence. And that really is a language shift from just focusing on domestic violence, because we know interpersonal violence can happen between more than just domestic partners, more than just married couples. And once I got into learning more about how prevalent it is, the impacts both in the short term and also many times long term, as a culture at the university, for the health clinic I was working in, the Pilates classes I was teaching, and individually, how can we offer more support within our scope of practice for anyone? And that's really what a trauma-informed approach is about, is recognizing the prevalence of trauma, the impacts on the body. And how I got into this was I wanted to help other people. And the longer I studied it, the more I understood, I realized and recognized, oh, I have experienced trauma in different ways throughout my lifetime, but we simply weren't talking about it when I was a child or even in my early 20s or 30s, the way we are today.
Absolutely. And you, on your website, trifectapilates.com, you have a great definition of trauma. You want to share that with us?
Sure. Trauma really is more than just an event itself. And this is a shift away from maybe what we used to think about trauma. Someone experiencing an event means it's going to be traumatic. It's actually someone's personal experience with it. And does it have lasting effects. And maybe the lasting effects are a few months, maybe a few years. For a lot of us, it may be a lifetime. And what happens is we're going to continue perhaps to explore those impacts. And what's beautiful about a trauma-informed approach, understanding trauma, is that we know the support system someone has during the event that took place and also afterwards. And this could be in the immediate afterwards. It could be many years or even decades afterwards. When we get support is actually when we can start healing. And so that support system, tapping into that in our community, in our faith, those around us, is so important for the healing and integration of trauma. So one last element that could be helpful to expand that definition of trauma is, I really think of it as a detachment away from our most authentic expression of who we are. And when we open up the doors to that, it's a disruption of our nervous system. And our nervous system is meant to be resilient. But what happens is we experience more traumatic events, maybe chronic stress, we are always busy, that the nervous system uses very similar pathways, and we may be ingrained into reacting or responding in a way that isn't ideal for our authentic expression. And once we recognize that, you know, I'm not thriving, I'm not living my best life, what are the tools and resources that can really help me? And one of the beautiful elements now compared to when I first began understanding and implementing a trauma-informed approach to teaching Pilates is, in the beginning, it was trauma-informed yoga. And I thought, there's something there with Pilates, though. And I read Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps a Score, which can be a challenging book to read. And one person in there as the case study credited Pilates as a major part of her healing modality in conjunction with her therapy. What we know now is people can heal in many different ways in community, yoga, Pilates, dance, massage therapy, art therapy. What I love about this is it gives us more options. So if we're not resonating with yoga, we're not resonating with art therapy, well, what is going to be beneficial for us? So there's more personalization now than ever before.
And I love that you brought up the body keeps the score, because we always think, oh, I just need to heal it up here in my mind, in my head. And what we're learning as the new research comes out is there has to be a body release as well. And you can't just do it by thinking about it. As we're pulling all this together, you have such a wide scope of the interpersonal violence, the Pilates, your own personal story. How have you seen this play out in families where addiction is present, with working through with Pilates some of the body issues that are going on?
I think one of the major elements is the normalization of what may occur when we're moving our bodies. Sometimes some resistance, other times people have an emotional release because it's perhaps the first time in a long time they've taken time for themselves. And so they just start crying during a session. This is very common. For some people, it may be an indicator, you know, talking with someone may be very beneficial. Other times we cry because we just simply, that's what needs to happen. We don't need to really dialogue it and process it. Because crying is, of course, a huge human emotion that we want to be able to experience and feels safe to experience as we're doing that. And so that's one of the elements when we're thinking about Pilates is we want to feel safe to explore new expressions of movement, new exercises. And I'll never forget my very first Pilates class. It felt a little awkward and strange at first. Mm-hmm. That happens with a lot of Pilates specific exercises because they are very unique. And I encourage people just to give it a go and focus on what works for them. When it comes to addiction, particularly, I've found that it's really helpful for people who I've worked with is to focus on what is going to benefit them at that particular moment in their life story. So that may be something more challenging they want to work through. Maybe it's something a little bit more gentle. and restore them because they're going through high stress and they don't want to continue to engage their sympathetic nervous system. They need something a little bit more down-regulating for their body. So it really offers a wide range in which can support someone.
And it is, I'm thankful that you brought out the fact that these releases can happen and it doesn't require talk therapy. In fact, it pairs well with talk therapy, but sometimes the body just needs to release it and the Pilates can do that. And then what you brought out earlier was maybe the way that everybody else is doing it doesn't work for you. And there are choices. Then the other piece that is so difficult for many of the women that I work with, and you said it, maybe you haven't taken time for yourself in a long time. Maybe you haven't done any self-care. And how did you see Pilates as self-care as you were thinking back through the trauma, the PTSD of the cancer, thinking, you know, what do I need to do for my body in this Pilates area as I'm processing all of this?
Well, when I first began Pilates, it really was for a workout and physical considerations. So if I needed to do something more restorative or a different variation because that physically made sense, I would 100% do that. Yet what I didn't connect the dots with until I understood more about trauma and the nervous system is there's many other considerations why we may want to do different exercise options, why we may want to, rather than do a longer length Pilates workout, something as short as 10 minutes, that self-care doesn't have a time limit. It could be incredibly short and just as valuable. And I realized for myself that once I shifted away from more of the traditional model of fitness, hour-long workouts, they always have to be challenging, is it started feeling better in my body. I was more consistent. And this is what a lot of people I work with have experienced as well. When they take off the lens of what should workouts be, Pilates or otherwise, to what makes sense for me in this present moment, they're actually more consistent with workouts because the guilt comes off. We could not want to do an hour-long workout because we simply don't have the time. And if you follow someone who says there's 24 hours in a day, of course you have an hour-long, you can do an hour-long workout. I say they have not lived a real life with life's real demands because I have been there and I'm still there sometimes where hour-long workouts are not fitting into my day. I'm a full-time working mom, you know, and I volunteer a lot. And sometimes it's 10 minutes. Other times it's a day off. And removing the pressure from workouts and instead finding the joy is how we can really maintain motivation. So having some adaptability in how we move is so valuable. And I will say some people kind of are ready for this because they've tried those hour-long workouts consistently and they just aren't working. And other people takes a little bit more time. You're like, are you sure it's okay if I only do 10 minutes? Where I take the day off because the narrative has been so toxic around workouts for too long.
It has really been toxic. And I really appreciate you for bringing that out. It's like many things in our life of I'm going to do it. I'm going to drive myself to do it. I will push myself to do it. Where is the joy? Where is the presence? I mean, we put our earbuds in, we watch TV, we do anything but be present for our body. What's our body saying when we're not being present for our body and we're just pushing it? We're recreating this rhythm that isn't a healthy rhythm. So as you're working with trauma clients, what have been some of the success stories? Where have people really benefited from this? What's been your experience so far?
I found that it's putting the empowerment back into the client's hands for the people who I'm working with. So rather than Beth knows best, it's I can give you some options, but I want each person to listen to the innate wisdom of their body, what their body is telling them. And that can be a challenge because we have been told from a very young age not to listen to that. Even in, for instance, school system. Nope, you can't go to the bathroom right now. It's like, well, actually, my body's telling me I need to go to the bathroom right now. No, you have to do this instead. And we still have that today. Like, just keep working, just keep pushing. And so knowing that our body is actually, many times it starts as a whisper and it gets louder and louder. And eventually it screams. And sometimes that scream is you're going to get sick. You're going to injure your body. And when that happens, because we all get sick sometimes, even if we're in tune and listening to our body, especially if we're raising kids, they bring home all sorts of fun stuff, is that we can use that as, okay, can I listen to it when it is a little bit more quiet? So as an example, my husband will say, you're going to bed already? Yes, I'm going to bed early now because I'm noticing my energy's low, my immune system's a little bit down, my throat starts to tingle, and I need to do something different. We can apply the same with workouts. One is that edge. And for most people who have been injured during workouts, which it happens sometimes because we're moving the body after all, this is what they've said. I knew something wasn't right, but the teacher told me to keep pushing.
Yes. Yes. And or the coach told me to keep pushing. Yes. Yeah.
And I'm all for pushing in an intelligent way. We get stronger by pushing and we injure by pushing. That's the challenge, is that we want to find that option that's our just right. I call it our Goldilocks option, where it's, you know, the porridge isn't too hot. It's not too cold. What is our option? And for each of us, it's going to vary depending upon where we're at in our body, our life's history, how familiar we are with movement. And that recognition that this is really a personal journey is probably the most valuable element that people have benefited from Pilates. I mean, I could have given the answer like, we get stronger and more mobile and flexible, and people get off the floor and stand up with more ease, and their running time improves. There's all these other physical elements. But at the end of the day, it's that we are evaluating how it benefits us off of the mat and well beyond just our physical body.
So I know that you also train Pilates instructors. And let me ask this question kind of in a backdoor way. If I'm somebody and I know I'm dealing with trauma, maybe I saw a therapist for a while, but there's still some body things coming on. If I'm coming into a trauma-informed Pilates teacher, what do I expect? What can they do differently for me than just one who is not trauma informed?
This is really personal depending upon where you're taking Pilates, what type of teacher you're taking with. Even if someone's trauma informed, we're going to teach and apply this in a slightly different way. If you're taking a one-on-one session compared to a group session, so there's a lot of variables that I want to just to highlight. One of the main elements is we are not centering Pilates. We are centering your experience. So it's not about the most challenging class or perfection. We're going to evaluate what really resonates with you, giving you more choices in what feels good for your body. And we may not phrase it like that. Maybe, do you like this option or this option? Well, this one feels better. Okay, we're going to go with that second option then. And so we try to really focus on including people, the people who we're working with, into our sessions. Even in the group session, we can do this. And this is something that I'll never forget from my days at the university teaching, that once I started incorporating this, I knew like I had made it, right? Even though I'm on this continued journey of always learning from my clients and improving my best practices, when I started noticing people doing different options than I was actually teaching, because they were relying on what we had done in the past. So one person would always bring a yoga block and use that for some of the exercises. Someone else would always use a resistance band for extra support for others. There's a third client who always would bring a blanket for additional padding, or two mats instead of one. Or when my legs were straight, their legs were bent. And this just takes time for teachers to unfold. And it's going to take time for people who are moving with Pilates to find their options that are really powerful and wonderful for them. It could be the most challenging option. Many times it's not. But what's beautiful about exploring this is we can take this into other workouts that we move with, other exercises, and that's what's so valuable.
How do I walk into a class like this knowing that my heart is really full. I'm probably going to break down in tears. What would, how do I feel safe in that environment? What would happen? What do you suggest for somebody who knows they need some extra care, they need some extra attention, and they're choosing to do the trauma-informed Pilates?
This is one of the reasons why actually a lot of people choose to move with Pilates out of their home, and why I specialize now in virtual workouts, because sometimes they don't feel comfortable going into a studio. For some people, that intimate environment, whether it's a private session or a small group class of four people, just feels a little bit too intimidating, and they actually want to feel and have more autonomy in their practice. This is something for people who I work with that they really appreciate, that the class is no longer directed by the teacher. It's really all on them, because they get to press play on the class that is in alignment with what they need. Maybe 20 minutes restorative or 20 minutes more of a power flow class. And they're more easily able to adjust that. Now, if you're working with someone one-on-one, sometimes that is easier to adjust because there's not other people in the space. But I think if we're going into a Pilates studio, one element is really ensuring that the studio that we are going to and the people who we're working with, that we feel supported by them, that we don't feel pressure to do something that we know isn't beneficial for our body. This is why I've known a lot of people who have tried out maybe a few different studio options before they find one that just feels right. And it really is just getting in there and experimenting. And that's something I think I want to highlight on just a little bit more, is if you've tried one movement class and you're like, I don't know about that, or I didn't really like that, well, maybe try it with a different teacher, a different instructor, or the same instructor another time. We all have off days when we're teaching or moving. And sometimes it's also just the element of new that can be really intimidating. So if you're looking into going to a studio, seeing if there's an FAQ section, expectations for where you're going to park. I mean, even that can be nerve-wracking. The payment process, you know, are you going to wear shoes? Are you not going to wear shoes? Are there maybe like little, they have like non-slip socks that sometimes you wear in Pilates studios? These little questions can be very helpful to have answered beforehand. But for my personal practice and for people who I work with, we found the best fit is really moving at home with Pilates is a wonderful way to just be in an environment that we really enjoy. And a little tip here for people who have a full household like I do, a strategy I use is before I work out, I ask everyone, I'm about to work out. Do you need anything from me? The answer is no. I go downstairs, and unless it's an emergency, they know this is my time and I will address it afterwards. Now, I have stopped the workout because yes, we have had emergencies that I needed to address right away. Right. But in that way, I'm not only carving out time for myself, but for my children. What I'm showing them is I'm modeling what I want them to do when maybe they're a parent. I still want them to take time for their self-care, even when they aren't a child.
Sure. And for that family that is dealing with a loved one with addiction, and the person who is basically the caretaker hasn't taken care of themselves, there are others that are watching them that are playing different roles. So that modeling piece is huge, that you can take that half an hour out, that hour out, that 10 minutes out to regain yourself. Because we know if we try and give from an empty cup, we really don't have anything to give. So I love the home focus on this. Tell us a little bit about your website and what folks are going to be able to find there, how they can make choices.
Thanks so much. On the website at trifectapilates.com, you can all find out all about what we do, everything from professional development to how you can try Pilates with me. And that's either on YouTube or for those people who want more versatile options, more programs, easy to follow calendars. There's the app as well. So you can find out all of that at trifectapilates.com.
So you too can bring Beth with all of her experience, over 20 years worth of experience, into your home. And especially if you are, this is how I happened upon all this. If you are in therapy, if you are working through some things, my experience has been that working with the body as well as with the mind speeds up that healing, allows those things to bring you back into the present. So I really encourage you to check out Beth at trifectapilates.com. We'll have all those things below in the show notes. And Beth, I can't thank you enough for pairing what you saw in your university setting with the interpersonal violence and saying, this isn't just about domestic partners. There's other things that are going on, which we find in families that are helping loved ones with addiction, and pairing that with your Pilates and then gifting it to the world. I mean, you could have just hidden that in hometown and done it that way, but gifting it to the world, allowing people to make different choices. There isn't one way. And thank you so much for being here on the Sober on Purpose podcast.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure to speak with you.
You, beloved listener, are creative, resourceful, and whole. Do you want to add more purpose to your sober journey? Do you want to make room for the new and make your dreams a reality? Apply today for a dream session. Go to tanyajoya.com. That's TanyaGioia.com and apply today. Let's get you dreaming about your new purpose.